so much for tuning in to the Soy Chingona podcast. I am your host, E. Marie. I'm excited to be here today with owner, creator, operator of Macroberries, Alejandra. Thank you so much for being here today. Do me a favor, LA, and introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell them a little bit about who you are today.
Of course. Well, thank you for having me on your podcast. It means a lot.
Thank you.
So, my name is Alejandra Parker. I go by Ale. I'm married. I'm 25 years old. So, I was born in Mexico, brought here when I was a month old. I'm a Latina
Oh, you're Latina. You're a business owner.
I'm a business owner of a small macrame. I don't know why I'm getting so basically who I am today. Just want to like kind of get my thoughts together.
You're a business owner. Why don't we start with that? Let's talk about your company.
Okay.
Tell us what it is, first of all.
Okay.
Macroberries. What is Macroberries?
Okay. Well, Macroberries basically started like in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my hobby.
Okay.
But it basically started for three reasons. One, my like just hunger to create things that are like art, something artsy. Like I tried different things first, like poetry, painting. Like I would do that ever since I was in high school. And then I found out about macrame, so then I had my husband. Do you want me to just talk about it? I found out about macrame and I wanted to learn. I heard that my husband's mom knew how to do it.
Okay.
So when I went to Ohio, I asked her about it and she taught me how to do a simple knot. So then after that, I came home to San Diego and I just started kind of researching it and looking into it and started learning new designs and patterns.
As just a hobby, right? This was just something that you're like, oh, that looks cool. Like,
exactly.
I'll try it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because I did try embroidery before that, and it was nice, but it was, like, too time-consuming, and I just found that macrame was, like, more peaceful to make.
Yeah, it was more relaxing.
More relaxing for me and kind of an outlet in a way.
Yeah.
And after I found out how to make macrame, I had recently had my last surgery from like ulcerative colitis.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just started thinking about the people that are still suffering with that. So then I thought, I'm hungry to make this and I'm hungry to make macrame and I kind of want to start selling it because people are liking it online when I post it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking me if I would sell them to them. So then I thought, what if I donate to the foundation? It's at least something I can do for the people that are still suffering. Hopefully they can find a cure.
Yeah.
So then we were in the living room with my husband and he's into like graphic design. He's really good at drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had him just create a logo just like you.
that's exactly what I did.
And
right. That's funny because we were just talking about that on Sunday. And
yeah.
I like literally went to my husband like, I need a logo and I need you to like help me do it. And he's like, what?
And then, I was being very picky with the colors and we were playing around with it. So when someone asked me like, what does like the logo symbolize, the berries.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally just spontaneous. Like it just came out of like a hobby. But there's like a reason why like macroberries, is a thing for me, and it means a lot to me. So.
So when did you finally get established as an actual business? When did you start the business?
I started, last year in November.
Okay.
Yeah, another reason I started it was because my husband was getting ready to deploy for a whole year. So I thought, I want to keep myself as busy as I can.
Yeah.
So as soon as he left, I still took a month to kind of organize, make a website, just kind of prepare for it, and just launch it.
So what made you decide that you were going to take this from a hobby to an actual business?
I guess my motto is to stay, to get uncomfortable, to go out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been doing. Like selling at a market like that you hosted, that was out of my comfort zone. Doing a podcast is out of my comfort zone.
Yes.
You know, so like I just like go for things. Like they're scary and like they make me nervous, but I just go for it, and that's, I just went for it with like no end goal. But now that I'm you know, meeting new people thanks to you, and like getting offered opportunities for a shop like Gypsy Magic.
Uh-huh.
I met Jackie and she works at Gypsy Magic. Yeah. And now my macrame is in her shop.
Nice.
And then there's another offer I got as well. So now that all these opportunities are coming, I'm starting to see like a bigger picture of it.
Yeah.
And I definitely want it to get bigger, you know, like I think it'd be nice also to grow older, maybe have kids, and maybe like be a stay-at-home mom and like do macrame. You know, it's an idea. I'm not really sure yet.
It's kind of funny how this went from a hobby of something to keep you occupied, something to do on the side, just to like keep your creative juices like flowing, and then it turns into something completely different than what you expected, right? And like getting into the business part of it. The cool thing for me in this is that what you just said about getting out of your comfort zone, that's really awesome as Soy Chingona to be a part of two big things for you, the podcast and the market, is really, really cool for me. So thank you for letting me be a part of that journey like for you too. For those of you listeners that don't know, because I really don't say a lot on the podcast, but we're part of a community market that we do in an area of San Diego called La Mesa, and we work with Marley's Coffee. They've been on my podcast before, and I help them produce this market once a month. We've been doing it for 4 months, and so that's really a beautiful thing to have that all connect and have you say, like, that's part of, like, me getting out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because it's something that's why we were creating that market, right? Was to bring small business and new vendors together to vibe off of each other, help each other out. Oh, how did you become this? Like, how did you get your stuff in this store? Like, how do we grow and how do we support each other? So that's such a great example of, like, you and Jackie getting together and being able to, like, move your stuff into her store, too. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool to hear.
Thank you. Exactly.
Very, very cool. Along with your business, let's talk about your health issues and what you've gone through. Can you explain to the listeners what you have and what that kind of consists of?
Of course. So I have or had, not sure if I'm fully cured yet, but something called ulcerative colitis. It's similar to Crohn's colitis, if that's more familiar to people.
Yeah.
It's basically an autoimmune disease that's like genetically inherited.
Okay.
So it was like it's inflammation of the colon. You have like several bathroom trips. I personally got arthritis and it went away, but I had really bad arthritis, and it was hard to eat because like my stomach hurt with everything that I ate, even water. So I was diagnosed with that in 2015.
Okay.
The rough part is that I didn't have health insurance, and so I had to like fight for that for a little bit. But I went to the hospital 3 times before they actually took me seriously and actually wanted to look inside my stomach to see what was going on. But in those 3 months, I lost a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm petite as it is, and so I was even so bony.
Yeah.
So finally, they diagnosed me, and they gave me medication. I'd say that the medication that they would give me would last, like, 3 months. I'd be fine. And then again, I would it wouldn't work. So I was on 5 different pill medications, and then finally I decided that they wanted to do infusions. Mm-hmm. So like they would just give me my medicine through an IV on my arm, and that part was really hard because I was given to me in like a cancer. So it was given to me in a cancer like facility, so it was rough seeing other people.
Yeah.
You know, suffering.
Right.
You know, with losing the hair and chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And so after getting a couple infusions, that didn't work, so then I was on my last. On the next medicine.
Okay.
And of course that didn't work, so that's, yeah, you know.
Just like trial and error, right?
Exactly. So then I decided, you know what, I was at the hospital and I told the doctor, you know what, I'm just ready for surgery. Just take my colon out. Like, I'm like so tired. I'm like drained, and it's hard because I still have to go to work because, I mean, I have to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't live with my parents, and,
what you were doing, was that so that you could try to avoid surgery?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because the thought of surgery when I first got diagnosed was scary to me.
Sure, and you're so young dealing with this, too. I mean, those are some pretty heavy decisions to make at a young age.
Yeah, I think the rough part also is when I first got diagnosed, my parents being traditional Mexicans,
mm-hmm.
They would just be like, oh, it's probably because you don't sleep good. Oh, just take a spoonful of olive oil. Like, it was just like, I wasn't getting the support I needed.
Right, you're like, sorry, parents, but this is actually, like, a lot, like,
yeah,
rougher of a deal than what you think this is. Like,
yeah, it took them a while. Like, I had to explain to them what it actually is and how I could have gotten it. They finally came around, but that was rough itself.
Right, because now you're taking on the responsibility of educating the people around you, right?
Yeah.
So you're, like, educating yourself, going through the pain of it all, going through the meds,
yeah,
the paperwork, and then educating everybody else on top of it.
Yeah, so more about the symptoms. I would go to work. I would have to use I would get urges to use the restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't wait. Like, I would literally have to run. But before that, like, I would get cramps. I would get, like, chills in my head. And I would just need to use the restroom. So there were a couple times, and I like to look back and laugh at it, where I had to improvise. Like, I did ruin a lot of pants, not gonna lie. Like,
yeah,
I shit
I'm
my
sure.
pants.
I'm sure.
Like, I went fishing. I had to just stop somewhere there and, like, you know, improvise.
Yeah.
At, like, a fitting room. Yeah, like, there was a point where I wore diapers.
Yeah.
I felt uncomfortable with it, so I just tried it for a little bit, just because I would have to hide it with my clothes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like a poop mess sometimes.
So you buy like the Depends?
Yeah, like my
yeah.
mom got them for me, so
yeah.
I just like tried them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of that. So my surgery, it was a 3-step surgery.
Okay.
So the first surgery, they removed my colon, and then they put something called an ileostomy bag.
Uh-huh.
So an ileostomy bag is something that is connected basically to your intestine that's sticking out in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just, you know, went to the bathroom that way. So
okay.
I didn't have to sit down in the bathroom for like 9 months.
Wow.
So then the second surgery was 3 months later. They removed my rectum this time.
Okay.
And then they took out a different intestine. And then I still had the ileostomy.
Wow.
So then 3 months after that, finally they removed the ileostomy bag. They tied everything together. It's called a J-pouch.
Okay.
So now I'm better. I can eat whatever I want, basically. Well, not whatever I want, but I can eat a lot. I still have to use the restroom like 8 to 10 to 12 times a day, just because like I don't have like a colon, like everything just goes by faster. But I'm still grateful that I'm here. Like I feel better. And because I feel better, I just want to help other people, hopefully, you know, through the surgery. I did meet some girl online on Instagram on Documedia, because my ex-boyfriend, he posted a picture of me on Documedia. I don't know if you're familiar with the Instagram. So then she reached out to me, and she was telling me that she was going through the same thing and she was scared to have surgery. So then I just kind of walked through her through what I was gonna, what I went through, and she felt more relaxed, and we even met up in LA.
Really? So you got to meet her and everything too?
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. Just to, again, like, it's just when you're going through these things in life, how important it is to share your story so that you can not just help someone else, but it helps you too, right? And, and it helps you feel connected and not feel so alone in the process, because here you are going through this, and I'm sure, I mean, have you even heard of the disease before you had it?
No, not at all. Right. I didn't know anything. Nobody knows what it is. My friends would forget I had it.
Yeah. That's like, pretty crazy.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, again, it's one of these things that, and I think for people who have certain illnesses, I think it's harder when people can't visually see what you have.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Because then they forget.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was another, like, hard thing, too. My friends would forget, which is kind of hard, but I try to understand, just because it is an invisible disease.
Right.
And I would just kind of hide that I was in pain sometimes, and
that's
I would
what
just kind of
ask you about.
I would hide it. The doctors would actually like, I'd go in and I just like calmly tell them what's going on, and after they check me out, they'd just kind of pause and be like, girl, why don't you show that you're in pain? Like, it's crazy. Like, this must be hard for you. Like, I don't even know how you're still smiling.
Why do you think, now that you're looking back at it, why do you think you held back on sharing what you were going through with your pain?
I just try not to be sad all the time.
Were you afraid of people judging what you were going through?
No, I guess I just didn't really want, like, the attention as much. Okay. But I would definitely, like, go to the bathroom and cry a lot.
Yeah.
But then I would come out and try to, like, you know, feel happy and, you know, just try to ignore that, like, that I was just felt like crap in the bathroom, you know? Like, it's just, like, a form of, like, coping, like, just try to enjoy the moment and until like my next pain came along.
And it sounds like you weren't given a lot of time to be able to process what you're going through either, right? It sounds like everything happened pretty fast after you were diagnosed, right? It seems like everything moved pretty quickly for you.
Yeah, it did.
What was in the beginning, when you were going to the doctors and stuff, what were the symptoms that you were dealing with before you were diagnosed?
So I would go to the restroom a lot. At first I thought maybe I had food poisoning. But then I started seeing blood. And then I was still shocked that nobody believed me, not even like my immediate family, that something was wrong, even when I told them that there was blood when I went to the restroom. Something that took me to the hospital was like really strong joint pain. It hurt to just, it just, my, like, my shoulder just hurt, or the next day, or 3 days later, like, my ankle would hurt really bad, and it would be swollen for no reason, and yeah. then all of a sudden, my knee would be, like, hurting, and it would hurt really bad, and they would just give you painkillers at the doctor.
Right.
And they would say, like, there's nothing wrong, like, just take painkillers and go home, so that's what I would do. And I would take, like, hot, like, warm baths to, like, make it go away for a little bit. But it hurt, like, even, like, just being there, it hurt. Like, nothing worked, really. I was losing a lot of weight.
The weight things,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was getting so skinny. My clothes were fitting me very loose. That's another thing too, like, I started to feel very self-conscious and secure about my body.
Sure.
Then I developed anxiety. Well, I already had anxiety, but my anxiety just got worse.
Yeah, I can only imagine, because you were dealing with this on such a heavy level, and you weren't being able to process everything either, because it was just like you had to make all these decisions about what you were going to do for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, what direction was the best way for you to take care of yourself. And
yeah. So in public places, if I didn't see a restroom right away, I'd freak out a little bit until I found one.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, like, just in case, like, I started to get an urge.
Yeah.
There are times where I needed to use the restroom, but there was a long line.
Yeah.
So there were a couple times where I did go in front of the line, and I said, look, I have this, like, illness that I really need to go. Can I please go? There was a couple places that, like, a gas station or, like, that they wouldn't let me go inside to use the restroom, and then I just have to, like, run, and, like, my boyfriend at the time would just drive me to the nearest available restroom.
The boyfriend that you had at the time isn't your husband that you have now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would just have really bad anxiety. Same with the ileostomy bag, because I had to take it off. It was a process to take it off. It was a process to put it on. I couldn't really get it wet. There were times where it would leak. There was this one horrible time where I ate something spicy, and it leaked, and I was in LA, and it was burning my skin. And I was with a lady who just got frustrated with me, and she was getting frustrated. She wasn't understanding, and that was made me have more anxiety at the time. But I just like to look back and not think too much about it.
Yeah.
But just think about now how good I feel, and just try to get out of my comfort zone and take more like challenges and try new things all the time, just because at a time I couldn't really even go hang out with my friends, because I just couldn't, you know.
So you're just trying to live life right now, right? Like, live it to its fullest. And, like, literally.
Yes.
Literally, I'm trying to enjoy life right now because I haven't been able to.
Yeah.
I mean, what a difference in your world, like, in your everyday life. How did you, going through all that, affect your past relationship? I'm sure that had a lot to do with it's not like you can separate that from what you're going through, right? It's like such consuming your everyday life. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So, with my past relationship, I'm thankful because he was very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of felt like a dependency on him, because he would just, like, just take care of me and, like, just do a lot for me.
Okay.
But I can tell, like, sometimes it would kind of take a toll on him, you know, like, he was young too, you know, so I'm sure sometimes he felt stressed, or, like, sometimes he wanted to help and he couldn't help me the best I could.
Yeah.
You know, like, trying to help me a little bit financially. But thankfully, at the time, it wasn't much of an issue. I think I got, like, the best support I could from that past relationship. When it came to my parents,
that was the hard part for you.
Yeah, because they didn't understand. And so I don't really have a lot of family here.
Yeah.
So, like, I felt alone sometimes.
Yeah.
And then my friends would forget, too, so.
Right.
Like,
I'm sure that's, like, the last thing you wanted to do is keep reminding your friends when you were going through things, right? Or, like, when things would trigger, like.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think I had a really good support system.
Yeah.
With my doctors, too, they were very genuine and,
yeah,
you know, cared about me, so.
That's awesome that that made up for it, you
yeah.
know, if you're not having the support, but at least you're able to find it, you know, in other ways and stuff. With your parents, it's so, culturally, it's such a weird thing. We have stuff like this that pops up in our family, and when my grandma was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was, like, the worst thing in the world to try to explain to the family, because they were just so old school in their ways that it was such, like, if it's something that they never heard of, then it was almost like it really didn't exist. And they were in denial for so long. And it was like our whole family was in denial for years. And it took them years to come around, get educated, and realize that it's a disease that she has no control over. I think that was a hard part of explaining to people. When you have a disease, you don't have control over
yeah.
what it's doing to you
yeah.
and how it's affecting you. So, do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a 27-year-old sister and a 20-year-old brother. But my sister, she moved to Sacramento ever since she finished high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really had as close of a bond as I would like to.
Yeah.
We also have different dads, and I think just our family wasn't all, like, lovey-dovey.
Yeah.
So she just actually moved back to San Diego. So just trying to create, like, a better connection with her now that
yeah.
she's here. My brother, the same, you know, like, my family wasn't very lovey-dovey, so it isn't until, like, this year or the past year where he's been more like supportive.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where he would actually take me to the doctor when I couldn't drive because I was on medication.
Yeah.
But as we're at the time, they tried, but I've just never really been close to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now that you've had the surgery and you've gone through so much this far, is it something that surgery fixes it and you're good to go? Is it something that you can get other things that are caused from it? Like, what happens now moving forward?
Yeah, definitely. So every year I have to get something called a pouchoscopy.
Okay.
It's like a colonoscopy. So
yeah.
You're under sedation and they put a camera inside you to look inside your stomach.
Okay.
I haven't gotten one yet. I'm actually scheduled for this Thursday, so I'm kind of nervous.
Okay.
Yeah. But I am prone to get something called pouchitis.
Okay.
So it's still, like, inflammation of that area, because I think I still have a little bit of my rectum in me.
Okay.
So if that gets inflamed, like, I could start just getting the same symptoms as before, like a little bit of blood, like stomach cramping. Like even more frequent like bowel movements. Something that did make me nervous was I guess having, like, a family, because my stomach, you know, there's so much going on in there.
Right. I was gonna ask that's
yeah.
what I was gonna ask you about was, you know, if you were able to carry and are you able to carry as
of
now?
I definitely asked a doctor. He said that I am able to carry.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that it would be hard to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
But once I conceive, everything should be normal. but it still makes me nervous.
Yeah.
The whole just being pregnant and having so much.
Your body's been through so much.
Yeah, and I'm really scared.
Yeah.
That's definitely something I need to look more into.
Okay.
The doctor did say that if I can't conceive, then there's something called, starts with a B, where they put the sperm in you.
Yeah. It's the IVF process. There's two different types of it.
Yeah. So he did talk about that option. But that's just something I'm nervous about, so I'm not looking into that yet.
Okay. Yeah. You're all, I'm not there yet. I'll get there.
I'm not there yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just interesting to know. Like, and I could see where that fear would come from. Like, just knowing, you seem very in tune with your body. It seems like you've had no choice but to be in tune with everything that's going on in your body. So I can't imagine. Does what you've had done in the surgery, does that affect anything else medically, like your period and stuff, getting that? Like, does it affect those things, or how does it affect those things?
Yes, it does. So whenever I get my period, I need to use the restroom more, and like, mm-hmm. I just feel uncomfortable, like just my whole like stomach area, and like just using the restroom. And that's like the worst like part of the month for me, besides, you know, just stomach cramping as well.
Yeah.
From regular, you know, monthly menstrual cycles. I think as far as my period, that's all it affects. I still get my mood swings, but I think that's just like my normal body.
Yeah.
I would say that my menstrual cycle is irregular.
Okay.
Sometimes it's late, sometimes it's early, sometimes it's really short, sometimes it's longer. So
that's probably where the difficulty would come in on trying to conceive.
Exactly.
Because that stuff isn't consistent, so that's exactly. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And that makes sense why they would say then the IVF might be an option for you when you get to that point.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship, your husband. How do you guys meet?
Okay, so we met under a bridge. His brother was having like a rave concert under like a bridge. It's not my type of thing. It's not his type of thing. Somehow we just ended there. We both seemed kind of like it's not our thing. But he just came up to me and he asked me, "Hey,
you look out of place."
Yeah.
I feel out of place. You look out of place.
Yeah. Yeah. So that night he just asked me, "Hey, do you want to dance?" And I just didn't want to pay attention to boys, so then I was just sassy, and I was just like, "No, I don't know how to dance." And then he just said, "Do you want to not dance together?" And I think that's what got me, I guess. So we just started talking. I learned that he was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think much of it. So when I started getting to know him, I learned that we had a lot in common, our values aligned.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good at art. He loves just doing similar things that I'm interested in, and so then we just kind of clicked. Yeah.
Where were you in the process of everything you were going through health-wise when you met him?
So when I met him, I actually had my ileostomy bag. I was very open about my ileostomy bag, but when I met him, I was trying to hide it. I couldn't hide it for long because one day he just felt something there and he heard it, you know, like a bag noise.
Okay.
So then it was hard, but I just like still like denied that it was anything. So then he offered to take me to the doctor's. So we were in the waiting room, and that's when I decided to tell him.
Wow.
And then he said, like, he knew there was, like, something going on with me, but still he just wanted to be there for me. And so he's been really supportive he was there through my last surgery.
Wow.
Yeah. We got married, like 4 months into knowing each other.
Okay.
And I feel like that's also like a type of like stigma. Like I didn't really want to tell people that, you know, we got married so quickly, but I just, it's just like a mutual feeling between me and him. We yeah. just felt that we connected, and it's still that way. So a couple, like I'd say like 6 months after getting married, he got orders to deploy in the Middle East.
Okay.
So now he's deployed there. I think he'll be back in 5 months. But that's also been hard itself. Mm-hmm. Just trying to keep busy, and you know, he's like, he's just emotionally supportive for me just because I'm an emotional person. Yeah. You know, sometimes I still have anxiety.
Yeah.
Just
he's your supporter, right?
Yeah, so now that he's gone, I've been focusing on myself,
mm-hmm.
Just trying to be a, like, a stronger person, more yeah. independent,
yeah.
For, so that when he comes back, you know, he sees that I've done
yeah.
a lot, you know.
Which is really awesome, Ellen, because I really feel like you're in this, like, beautiful part of your life where you're just like ready to take advantage of whatever is supposed to come your way, and it sounds like you're really open right now and really vulnerable right now, but it's a really beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to feel being with you, because I just feel how much you're just like open to life right now, and that's not something that you don't find a lot of people that are open to just whatever life has to give them right now. And I think it's because people are just so used to take advantage of life, right? And we're used to taking advantage of everyday living, where you didn't get those advantages. So it's just, it just seems like you're just in this really, like I said, beautiful peace and moment of your life where you're just really ready to take in, you know, whatever the world wants to offer you, and it sounds like there's a lot out there for you, and it's really awesome. It's really amazing that you're going, I know you've been through so much, but what you're doing, what you've taken from it, and what you're pushing forward right now, really, really amazing. I really give you credit for not having all the support that you wanted while you were going through it, and but you were still able to push through all this, you know, and a lot of people would have taken that in a different direction, you know, and not having it and start building a lot of bitterness towards the people around them. But it doesn't sound like that's what you, it doesn't seem like you're bitter towards the people around you that weren't able to support or understand.
I'm not.
Yeah, I can tell. It seems like you're very like, alright, well, they couldn't be there for me during that time. Like, you're very like, oh well, they weren't there for that part of it, so, okay, like, what can you do?
Yeah.
And how's your relationship now with your parents?
It's definitely better.
Mm-hmm.
If I do share a little bit about my parents, my mom wasn't, like, the best. As showing that she loved us,
mm-hmm.
so she would do a lot of like verbally abusive things,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes physically, so it's hard to get out of my brain sometimes. So now that I'm older, she tries to show me that love, like hugging, kissing.
Yeah.
And at first it was weird, and I would just kind of feel resentful, like, why are you doing this now? Like, I needed
why
this
now?
When I was younger, you know?
Right.
And so I did struggle a lot with that, like,
yeah.
until recently, too, when I just kind of said to myself, you know what? I'm just going to let it go. Just going to let it go. I mean, you know, she's trying, so I'm just going to let it go and live life to the fullest, you know. Forgive
yeah.
people, because if you don't forgive them, then it's just gonna be there, and you're not gonna be able to have a good relationship.
Anything with them.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, they've kind of learned to give me my space.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first they wanted to just be in my bubble. They were in my bubble all the time. During hospital visits, they would ask me so many questions and overwhelm me, and I had to tell them, hey, like, actually, this is weird, but I'm okay being alone at the hospital.
Which in Latino families, you did not hear. Like, yeah. I'm okay being alone with anything, so
yeah.
I'm sure that was not easy for them to hear from you.
Yeah, they did get upset, because I actually had, like, the boyfriend at the time kind of, like, gently tell them, and they weren't, like, okay with it, but then they kind of realize, okay, it's Ale's health, and
right.
You know, she needs her space, and
yeah.
Ever since then, they've been able to give me my space until now, and whenever I'm ready, or when I have time, like, I give them a call, or, like,
yeah.
I go visit them, you know, like, they don't try to, like, shove themselves in my life as much, you know.
Which is nice that they're
it's nice.
Able to take that step back. I feel like, again, like, culturally, our families are not used to having to take those steps back.
Yeah.
They want to be even more involved. So
yeah.
That's really awesome that at least you're being able to experience that right now, is them being okay and not thinking that you're just being dramatic, or you're,
yeah.
You know, like, oh my gosh, she's so in her own little world, she can't even think about us. Like,
yeah.
They seem to be really respecting
yeah.
that space for you, which is unheard of.
Yeah, and that's, I like that they're respecting my space, because that makes me want to be around them, you know?
Yes, so I get that one.
Win-win for both.
Makes you miss them
yeah.
more and want them around.
Yeah.
Right, so when you miss them, you actually miss them. And it
exactly.
feels like you miss them.
Yeah.
And so, and now, are they still live here?
Yeah, they're in San Diego,
uh-huh.
National City area, to be
okay.
specific. Yeah, so it looks like my immediate family is all in San Diego now.
Okay.
Don't really have aunts or uncles here, or cousins.
Right.
So it's just them and us.
And what's next for Macroberries?
Macroberries?
Yeah.
So I'm starting to do a lot of events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not trying to overwhelm myself, but, through another event, I was offered to have my macrame in their shop once they open next month. So she wants me to, like, just message her through Instagram and just let her know. So that's the next step. It's still a trial and error, everything I'm doing.
Right.
I just kind of went into
yes.
everything I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm just going for it. Like, I sometimes I don't know what I'm doing, but I just go for it and, like, just kind of trial and error. So if something
yeah.
doesn't work out, then I'm gonna try this or try this next time, you know?
Yeah.
So as of now, just get to work, make more macrame.
Yeah, which is
yeah.
really cool. Having being a vendor and going to these markets, it's really awesome, but it's also really cool to have your stuff set up at a place, right? So while you're being an entrepreneur, you're creating all this stuff, you have one spot for people to actually go and find your stuff.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It feels like it's taking, like, the next little step up from
yeah.
vending, right? It's like another little
yeah
push
exactly.
up on there.
Yeah. As far as vending, I like that I don't feel, like, bummed if I don't sell a lot, just because I try to think of it as still, like, my hobby a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just showcasing my work. Like, I'm sure, like, that could be a struggle maybe for me in the future if I, you know, make a lot, like, I don't really sell much.
Right.
But, again, it's just a trial and error.
See what happens. Where it goes from there.
Yeah.
And well, you're having some really cool stuff, and those wine holders that you're making, my mom's absolutely obsessed with the one that she bought on Sunday.
Oh, thank you.
But it's really cool to see you growing and creating more and doing more things with your business and stuff. So you do work full-time now?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Right now I work full-time at an office for termite and pest control.
Okay.
So I'm just a receptionist.
Okay.
It's not something I see myself doing long-term.
Yeah.
As far as school, I was going to college, but I kept dropping my classes because of my illness.
Yeah.
So after I had my last surgery, I realized that what I was going to school for, which is like, first it was psychology, then it was graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really something that is like,
it's not calling you.
Yeah, it's not calling mm-hmm. me. So I just took the time. I'm taking the time still to see what I want to do. Who knows? Like, I may not go back to college.
You know? Yeah.
Like, I don't really know what's going on. And at first, I did feel like the pressure that you have to go to college. You have to do this a certain age. You have to have a degree. Like, I don't know. But right now I'm doing fine at my job.
You're like, I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm healthy, so I'm doing good, guys.
I'm fine.
Like, yeah. I may or may not do all these other things, but it doesn't matter. Right now, in the moment, I feel good.
Yeah.
So that's what matters. As we're coming to the end of the podcast here, what advice can you give out there to the listeners who either are experiencing symptoms and scared to take that next step to find out what everything's going on? What advice can you give to people who are dealing with those internal illnesses that people don't really see?
Yeah, definitely. So something I personally did was try to find support systems online. So I had Facebook. I looked up several groups and I joined them, and they would all have something similar to me, so there was like an ulcerative colitis group and there was a J pouch group. So they would both have people who would share what they're going through. People would ask questions, others would answer. So it was like a really strong support system on Facebook, really, from all around the world. And so that was really helpful, because if I had a question, I would just post it online, and several people have already gone through it, so they would just suggest, like, oh, try taking Imodium before an event, or try documenting what you're eating to see what's triggering you, a lot of that stuff. So when I did meet, I met two girls online through Instagram, and they were getting ready to have surgery, so I suggested the Facebook page, so they joined too. Just because I did ask my doctors questions, and they've never heard of it, or they don't really fully
know. Everything, right? They don't have all the answers.
Exactly. Right. They don't really fully know, or they were kind of questioning it, like, oh, I'm not sure why that's going on. So one thing that before I had my last surgery, I knew that I was going to get something called butt burn. So my butt was going to burn, because I don't know why it was going to burn. So then I looked up, I asked the question, like, what do you guys use for butt burn? And I bought, like, all these, like hygienic lotions, ointments and stuff. But when I was at the hospital, I asked the nurse and the doctor, and they're like, I asked them if my butt was going to burn, and they said, no, it's not.
They're like, we have no idea what you're talking about. Make you feel like an idiot asking a question.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Or then I asked them if they can get me some, like ointment or lotion, and they were just kind of confused, and they just got it for me. But it was true. I got butt burn, and it hurt.
Well, that's good that you had that community, that support, because I think that's, with a lot of different things medically, we can all be diagnosed with the same thing, and we'll all have different ways of dealing with it and find, like, different things. So that's awesome that you had that, like, group in order to find out different ways that were outside of your doctor's office that you can learn more about and deal with it. So that's really awesome that you're able to find that.
Yeah. I'd also say, if you have families, siblings, friends, don't be afraid to just show that, you're in pain and that you need the help. I was a little stubborn, too, when it came to accepting help, or, like, someone coming over and cooking for me. Like, I just didn't even want them to bother. Like, I just felt like, no, it's okay, I got it. I just felt like I needed to do everything, like, myself. So just kind of let go and you know.
Don't be afraid to be a little vulnerable.
Yeah, don't be afraid, for sure. I did get sad and down a lot of the times, but I just kept telling myself, and hopefully people that have ulcerative colitis and feel like it's just never ending, something I told myself was just, you know, never let yourself get back in that hole, get back in a hole, like a dark hole cave, because once you're down there, it's going to be hard to get up. So just, you know, keep fighting and just, you know, find support and, you know, try your best, because you can only do so much.
Thank you, Ali, so much for coming onto the podcast, for being so vulnerable on the podcast and sharing with the listeners. I know that this was really important for you to come on here and share and be open. And I think talking to you, knowing you in person, you're a lot stronger than what you give yourself credit for. And maybe it is because you're still processing a lot of the stuff that you went through, you know. And like I said, it didn't sound like you were able to process everything that you went through, because it was like, you were already preparing for the next step, so it's like you really couldn't deal with it, right?
Yeah.
And like, take that all in. So I appreciate that you're processing this now and sharing it. It's really important, because like I said, sometimes if you have never gone through something yourself or know someone immediately in your circle that's been through it, then you probably have never heard of it. You probably don't know what it's all about. So this is really important to educate our community on these things. And maybe just have people think twice when they're around other people and see them going through something in public that has anxiety. You just never know what that person is really going through internally. And obviously you've gone through that a lot of, you know, going through all these things inside and not letting people see. So thank you for allowing the listeners in and stuff, and I appreciate that a lot. So
thank you for allowing me to share my story.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. It's
a lot. And if anybody out there needs information on any of the things that we discussed, please feel free. And of course, I'll be tagging you and Macroberries on stuff. But don't be afraid to reach out to Ale or reach out to me, and we'll make sure that you guys get the information and support groups or anything else that you're looking for when it comes to dealing with these diseases that a lot of people don't talk about out loud, because it's not the prettiest picture, right, when you're talking about it. But people need to be more aware about these things so that we can learn how to support people in our community more. So again, Ali, thank you so much for allowing me in your home and to be here and finally getting you on the podcast. I know we've been talking about it for a while, so thank you. I appreciate
you. Thank you.
And until then, fist up, chingonas.